Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. This is your host with the most, Nikki Kolula. We're back with another quarantine episode of LA Talk Radio's Wake Up, Hollywood. We're here tonight with the lead guitarist of the Thrills band, Angel Leal. Say hello, Angel. How are you, man?
Hey, everyone. How are you?
All the way from space.
Yes. This is the Zoom greeting. This is like everyone does this at the end of the beginning of a meeting. If you show your hand, then you know that you're good.
That's funny. You know what? I'm looking at your background. Do you think that's Return of the Jedi, or is that? It looks like it could be Empire or Return of the Jedi.
If you're looking at the Death Star.
It
already has a little cut there.
Shouldn't that be Return of the Jedi?
Probably Return of the Jedi. I mean, or it could be something else. I don't know.
I love all those movies, man. It just takes you back. I used to listen to them on record. That's how much I used to love them.
Really?
Yeah, man. I would watch the movies, and then we had all the records, and then sometimes we would just play Return of the Jedi on record, and I would just listen to the whole movie, and you just picture things. And it's amazing. Some things you would picture to be exactly the same, and some things there'd be variants. Like, it would be weird because some things would just change in your mind, you know?
You're talking about, like an audio version of the dialogue and everything.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Like a script, and then just it for you.
Yeah, but it was just a vinyl of the record. I mean, I don't even know why we had it, but it was actually cool that we had it, and it was something I've never experienced doing in any other. I think you could only do it with like a Star Wars movie. You know what I mean? Where it's like you're pushing your imagination, but
very descriptive. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
I get that.
So you are all the way from, I don't even know where you're from.
I'm here in Arcadia. I'm from San Bernardino.
But you didn't grow up there, right?
Yep, I grew up there.
You grew up in Arcadia?
No, in San Bernardino. So I'm an IE guy. I'm in Arcadia now. I live here with my girlfriend.
In my hometown.
Yes. Well, you know, her son's going to high school here. So we thought it would be nice if he went to a nice high school. So
Arcadia High is a good high school, man. There's so many good things about it. It's one of the best public schools in California. So
yeah. So you know, the kids, they don't know. They don't know. But right. Once you're older, you're like, you know, just the little things like that, they matter later. Because right. Even if say you're at a certain level of a school district or a location, if that level is higher, it'll just push you up to work a little bit harder.
And not only that, I think the best thing that Arcadia High did for me was it put you in my graduating class was 932. And you realize the more you travel or meet people around the country or even around the world, most high schools were not that big for anybody else. You know, like there are maybe, I'd say 10% of the high schools around the country are that big.
It's a whole thing.
Yeah. So it may make you learn to kind of like thrive in a bigger environment.
Yeah, now everyone's at home, so that's a challenge. Have you been doing this show on this platform the COVID or before?
Since the COVID. We actually have a station in Sherman Oaks. And Sherman Oaks. And we've been doing it there for about 6 years. And when COVID hit, we were just like, okay, you know what? We actually had Diedrich Bader and a bunch of guests for a movie. Mm-hmm. And they were like, it was right at the beginning of COVID. So they were like uneasy about it. So we decided, let's do a Zoom. Let's make it just a Zoom thing and just keep this rolling. So we've been doing it. It's actually nice because I don't have to leave. And it's like, okay, it's super convenient, you know. But
how was the learning curve?
Oh, I mean, you know, it's a little different. But I mean, it's also in some ways it's better because people are more interactive with the video that you post or like the, you know, they get to see it like that. So because everything's like on social media these days. So it's good on that.
Yeah. It's really difficult to get something in real time. So when you have like a broadcast and then it gets rebroadcast later, it's a lot like TV where people don't really watch the shows live. They'll watch it when they have time.
Replay. Yes.
So yeah. I can see which where that can be.
Bad, which is good and bad. But so where did you grow up? Well, you said San Bernardino.
San Bernardino, yes.
Well, what high school did you go to?
San Gregorio High.
Okay. And did they have like a music? Did you have like a music department?
Oh, God, I wasn't into music back then. I was only a listener. I did a little bit when I was young, when I was a little kid. I did a little bit of singing choir. And then I forgot about that. And then later on, I remember I was in high school, late high school, and then I bought an acoustic guitar because I had taken a piano class. So the piano class is great. And I tell everyone learn the piano first because I just think it's such a great instrument because you can see everything low to high and you can just get a good feel for where the notes are in relation to each other. And because if you start with the guitar, you know, because of the way the strings go up and down and sideways, you can get lost in terms of scales and things like that.
And it's also guitar hurts when you start, like, you know, like the fingers need the calluses and all that stuff. But piano, you don't need any of that. It's like you just sit and play and it's like, okay, it's right there.
So I did that and I took a course and I learned a little bit about that. And then, you know, I had a buddy that I worked at this conference center. And he would always bring his guitar in and he would be playing along and he introduced me to Rush. And I was like, I want to play guitar. I just want to play guitar. So I went and I bought an old Yamaha acoustic, bought it in Redlands at a music store that was super small. It's probably not there anymore. And so then I just started doing that. And I remember I was so proud that I could do the intro to CCR, Proud Mary. I was like, oh, that's C to the A. And I was like, oh, that sounds so cool. And I was sitting there in my room and I showed my aunt and she was like, okay. And then
you're like, you don't understand.
Yeah, don't you? I'm making music. And then, and so that's where that started. And then I moved out when I was 18. I went out, I peaced out, got my little place, a little studio. And I would just sit there and I would just learn Rush songs, Who songs, Beatles and Eagles. I think those would be my four.
Great place to start. I mean, that's as good as it gets with songwriting and arrangement and chords. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of one of those things where I always tell people when you learn a song on guitar, it's like one of two things. You either go, oh, that's it. Or you go, oh, my God, that's it. You know, it's like there's two total different reactions. Either it's too easy or the fact that it's easy, it makes you excited that you want to keep playing it. You know, or it's something that is complex that you finally figured it out. And you're like, oh, my God. You know, so, man, do you remember all the songs that you learned in the beginning from each band?
Yeah. So one of the things that I learned from the Eagles is rhythm. So it would be a lot of strummy stuff. And so that was a very good foundation because, you know, Don Henley played a lot of stuff very even. So that really helped because back then, you know, a lot of times you really didn't have a metronome to play along with you, play along with records. Right. And then I would learn all the Eagles songs, just strummers. As far as like other stuff from The Who, I remember The Kids Are All Right, that movie.
Yep.
Holy cow. I rented that on a videotape and it was just like, wow. And I would just sit there and go through everything, you know, play along to the songs, play along to Sparks from the live. I think it was near the end. I think it was live at Leeds. I forget.
Right.
So I would learn those. And then with the Rush stuff, it was always musically gratifying because of the changes. They're
progressive. That's what I love about Rush.
Yeah, they're very galvanizing band. You either love them or hate them, and a lot of people hate them. But
yeah, I never saw them live. That's my big regret. I always wanted to see them live.
I think I saw them like three or four times at least live. And I saw them on their last tour at Irvine Meadows. And that was good stuff. And just the changes, like, you know, I would learn the trees, you know, the whole intro, stuff like that. I don't think I was ever able to go through the whole Bia Strangiato, but I gave it an effort, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's like the quintessential progressive rock and roll classic musician. Did you tackle anything crazy like Jimi Hendrix or Eric Clapton in the beginning?
Oh, Clapton, Santana, Hendrix. Those are like, that's when I went through a blues phase. Everybody gets there, right? Everybody's like, I'm learning the guitar, and then you hear a blues riff. And then I just like dove right in there with the Kings. Albert's my favorite King. I know everybody likes BB King.
Oh, I love
something about Albert. And I think it's because Stevie Ray Vaughan did a lot of those bends, and I just heard that. So I did a lot of that. And then Clapton, of course.
You probably have that record with the two of them playing, right? They did that.
Oh, the session?
Yes.
Yes, that's pretty great.
It's so good
stuff. And then the great thing is when you see Stevie's playing a little riff, and then Albert's like, "Oh, look at that!"
He's like, "Nice kid.
Look at what you're doing."
What's your favorite Albert King record?
Albert King record. The one I listen to most is it's a compendium, but I had another one that I think it's a live record. I think it's Blues Power.
Okay.
Yeah,
I don't have a lot of his stuff, but I have a couple. Obviously, I'm Born Under a Bad Sign. I've got like collection.
Yeah, Born Under a Bad Sign is great because I think that's, I don't know if that's the one that has Crosscut Saw, but that was one of my favorite songs.
He's such a badass, dude.
But with Blues Power, he starts that and that song, and he goes, "This is Blues Power." And you're like, yeah. So that led me to Clapton and the Beano album, which is the John Mayall stuff. And that's where I learned blues rock. You know, that leads you back to the beginning of that. Then I ended up with Mike Bloomfield, which he's underappreciated to me.
He's one of the best.
Electric Flag and Paul Butterfield Blues Band. So I was into that. I loved sitting there in my own place, just jamming along to that. And the thing about blues is that it's accessible. It's three notes, but it's hard.
You know what? It's funny. It's like, I always feel like blues music is probably the most iconic music that I think has ever been developed, because it literally has spawned into so many different directions.
Mm-hmm.
You have funk, you have blues, you got gospel, you got rock, you've got, you know, there's so many, even progressive stuff. A lot of that is based on blues, you know, in some, you know, wraparound way. But, you know, it's also one of the things that is hardest to be great at. It's like good to be good at, but it's hardest to be great at. Because even when when I'm learning licks or playing licks, I'm like, what makes great guitarists amazing at blues is when they make something a signature. And when you hear a Stevie Ray Vaughan and you hear what he's playing, you're like, I know that's Stevie Ray Vaughan. And that's the same. That's like the thing when you can hear somebody play and you're like,
and you know who that is.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so is Stevie Ray Vaughan one of your favorite guitarists?
Huh?
Stevie Ray Vaughan one of your favorite
guitarists? Oh, yes. I think anybody that likes to listen to blues, my first guitar was a Strat, and I'm still a Strat guy. It's just because of that, you know? Strat, yep. Single coils, put a humbucker in the bridge, and I can play anything, you know?
How many Strats do you have?
I have had three Strats. One of them is in pieces. I have a Charvel, which is really nice. It has two Seymour Duncans, and you can split the coils. I use that a lot. My number one Strat has this extra jumbo frets, and it's an American special. I don't spend a lot of money on my gear. So it's an American special. Right. It just has big jumbo frets, and I love it. It's just
I have one Strat, but it's like probably my most revered instrument in the electric realm. Just because it was like one of my first guitars, and it's also what I've had on every record on some level, or played at every show on some level. But I'm looking at other ones now. Like now they've got like the noiseless pickups, and they're, I mean, like I'd love to have a Strat that has noiseless pickups because that makes a huge difference.
Yes,
you kind of want that when you're playing, but it's also, it's nice. When I picked one up recently, I was like, oh man, I've got to have a noiseless, you know, Strat. Mm-hmm. That would be amazing.
I think I never had the hands to handle a Les Paul. It always seems so chunky. I know a lot of people with their hand shape, they're more interested in having that. That looks like your door, but having that. You have a ghost? Oh, it's your dog. Hello.
You see Otis?
What's up, Otis? I've seen him on your...
He's on my feed more than my music posts, man. He's the best.
That's how you get those likes, man. Just put the dog on.
Dude, I know. It's easy. No political posts.
Bring the dog up. Look, everyone. Here's my dog. Click, like.
You know, the funny thing is, like, I wish I would have... I kind of always want to have more strats, but it's like one of those things where I really love that one strat I have, and I think I would maybe get one more, but I think that would be it because there's so many guitars. It's so hard to just want to just limit it to one. You know what I mean? Yeah. One
X. Yeah, like me, I always end up going back to that strat, and when I go back to it, you use other guitars, and you think, oh, this is cool, right? You go back to it, and it's like home.
Right.
So... But that's just, I think that's because that's me. I'm shaped to that. Either that or that's how I got used to when I was playing when I was younger.
It is like the meat and potatoes, you know. And what do you play through out of curiosity?
Well, I play through a lot of things. Right now, I'm a big fan of Fractal Audio. So I have an AX8 and I just go direct to the board.
Oh, wow.
Life changing. So the pedals are inside. So it's a whole pedal. And then I usually use, for my cleans, I use a CAE emulation. For my dirties, I've been really stuck on Friedman, just Friedman stuff. It's great.
They're great.
Before that, when I was lugging my amp around, I had an Orange Rocker, which was amazing. It was 210s. So because it's 210s, it's not woofy at the bottom end. So whereas you get a 12, and I always had that issue before, where if you had a 12 and then you turn it up and there's a lot of bass in it, then you would get kind of woofy if it's a big cab. But that 210 was amazing. And then before that, I had a Deluxe, a 22-watt Fender Deluxe.
Love those.
Which was, for the cleans, it was amazing.
I also love how it breaks up, too. That's what I love about those amps. It's like they break up at, like, a lower volume than, like, you can see the twin right there.
Mm-hmm. And that's a beast.
I love that, but it's
crazy. You're never going to top that out.
Oh, man. It's on every record, but... Yeah, I use pedals to like have a break up, you know, like because you're just never gonna get there with just the amp unless you're playing like a humongous room, and even then, it's not the best break up. Whereas if you can get that kind of dirt with pedals, then it kind of does what you
need it to. Yeah, I had a supersonic head, and it was a 60-watt head.
Wow,
and that thing was massive. I had it at two; it was too loud for a club. One time we were playing in one of my older bands. It's a classic rock band, and we were playing the casino, and the sound guy comes up to me. He said, you know, I took you out of the mains because your amp is loud enough. I'm like, I'm only like at two or three. One time I played it it was a biker show, and we were outside in a huge parking lot, and I cranked it. It was a basement model of it, and I cranked it, and then I had a tube screamer on it. It was glorious. But you can't do that all the time, right?
Yeah. So, do you have a hand-wired tube screamer or the 909? Which one do you have?
Well, I usually use an OCD.
Okay.
Then I started using an OCD and it just works. It's the first time I can use it to boost, and I can use it to just be, you know, dirty. I like the overdrive.
You use that as your overdrive too.
Yeah, it's more organic, I think.
Okay. I use it as I kind of use it as my dirt for my overdrive. So I pair it with a carbon copy for delay, and then I have a Love Pedal Eternity that I think has the most beautiful kind of like overdrive, but it's not like a dirty overdrive. So it's almost like a clean boost, but it's not a clean boost. But if I pair with the OCD, that's my favorite.
Yes.
It is my
favorite. Stack it, right?
It's just, it's unbelievable. Yeah. I have like the Keeley buttons that you can kind of have both of them go on at the same time, you know?
So I had an Archer that I used to push it into the OCD. And that sound was great. That sound was really great.
So, you know what? We could talk gear forever, but when did you get into your first band?
Oh, shoot. I was already playing in the Living Room Player, and I would just play for myself. Then one time I decided to answer an ad. Somebody wanted to start a cover band. It was a just rock band. And there, the first conversation I had with my buddy was who's going to sing Weezer? Because we're like, oh, we like that song, Hashpipe. It was like newer then. And I was like, that's a great song. I'm like, I don't want to sing that. because I can sing, but I'm usually not the lead singer of the group. And so that's when it started, and we would play a lot of places, more inland, you know, Corona area, Riverside area. We would go up to the mountains, you know, up to the hill in Lake Arrowhead and things like that. And we were just playing the pubs and the clubs. And we did that for many years. And I moved on from that project. And then I started doing just classic rock. We had a female singer. And it was the first time I worked with a female singer. We're all really great friends. And after that, I've usually had a lot of female lead singers. I think that, I don't know, I think a lot of musicians, especially, I guess, guys, they sometimes, I don't want to deal with the female lead singer. And I think that's, I don't understand. I don't understand because it's, you have all the range. You have all the talent of someone that can sing certain songs. And then you still, if you want to sing, you have your guys that can, I usually do backups or things like that. So ever since then, that band kind of went on the wayside. And then I thought to myself, I need a top 40 band. I need a top 40 band because I want to do corporate events, you know, weddings, things like that. And I want to be able to cover a lot of material. And one of the things that I always say is that I love to rock, but dance pays. And, you know, that's just kind of the way it is, you know. And I like doing that. I like having the range. So, for example, I don't think I sent you that file, but, you know, we've got like a Depeche Mode song that I sing. So I can do those. I can do The Cure. But then if we're doing something.
Those are great bands.
But if we're doing something like Maroon 5, you know, I don't have that falsetto range. So
it's
then
nice to have a female to kind of do. There's like Fleetwood Mac tunes. There's like,
there's so many great songs.
Have them even do. I saw Heart do a Led Zeppelin cover, and it was like, oh my God, this is great.
I think I saw that. I think I saw that on YouTube.
So it's like, sometimes it lends itself to more material than just having a male lead singer.
Yeah. So I worked with a lot of bands that it's just the guys. And I'm like, guys, man, you have to expand your sound.
Right.
You have to.
I've always wanted to ask this actually. Like, so what if there's a song that's really popular that you don't want to learn? What if it's like a song you're not into?
Happens all the time.
Oh, so you still learn it and you're like, we need to have.
Absolutely. Can I even tell you?
Yeah. That's what this show is all about. I want to know the nitty gritty, man.
I'll tell you, it's never a hard path. I'll tell you this. I spent many a gigs when people would come up and say, hey, do you guys know, I don't know, the Wagon Wheel song? And I'd be like, okay. And then for a period of time, there was this whole, can you guys play Tennessee Whiskey? And I'm like, Tennessee Whiskey? I'm like, okay. So I listened to it. And it's like, it's a super simple song. And like for me, I wasn't getting it. But I got so many requests that, you know what, I have to do this. I learned it. Our singer nails it. She does an amazing job. And I actually enjoy playing it. So it's two chords and then you're done. But the thing is,
you have to find the joy in those two chords.
And that's sometimes the joy is in the performance. Right. And if it's a song that I don't want to play, at the end of the day, being at a gig playing a song that you're lukewarm over is better than not playing any gigs.
Right.
So then eventually I get into the parts. You know, the parts. What parts am I playing? Oh, there's a little tremolo here. I design my patch or my rig, because it's a virtual rig, on my board. And then we just have fun with it. And then you watch people. They enjoy it. So there's a lot of give and take. When you want to do covers, which is what our band does, you have to really do what people like. And that's just, it's part of, you know, the social contract. When a person's going to go out and see a band, they don't want to hear the B-sides. They want to hear something that they identify with. So
it's so funny because it's like, it's one of the hardest things. I don't even like when people ask for my own songs. That's what's weird. It's like,
I have a question about that.
Yeah, because go for it. You asked me this time.
I always wonder, say you have you write your own songs, and I admire when people can write their own songs, because I tried that early on and I always found that I got in my own way. Like my head got in my own way. Like, wait a minute, I think that melody sounds like something else.
Right.
So being able to take yourself out of that and write something and present it, I think is admirable. So you have a set, right? You have your set that's 20 songs. say you have an album, a couple of albums, you have 20, 30 songs, and you're always going to play those. So what do you do when you've played the same songs a couple of times in a tour?
So you know what? It's funny because I've been doing this band since 2002, 18 years. We've never played the same set twice. Mm-hmm. Never. And it's like, I think a big part of it is I kind of like, I have to keep myself on my own toes. And if I keep myself on my own toes, I know I can keep my band on their toes because I'll always throw in new arrangements, new intros, new covers, new originals. We'll do mashups of old songs from old records. Mm-hmm. So it's never the same. The one thing that I find that it's difficult is, 18 years of being in a band, and even if it's original songs, you sometimes forget the songs that maybe were like deeper cuts on a record. So you have to go back and relearn your own songs. And I also find that whenever you're putting something out there that's original, you're always a little bit ahead of the curve. So any artist that's putting music out there, you don't know how the reaction is going to be really until it's been out for 6 months or a year. So people sometimes love to request songs from old records when we're promoting a new record. So, yeah. But the thing with me, it's like I always want to try to honor fan requests. And this is what I really admire about cover bands because, there's a part of it where it's like, You do want to play into the crowd being a part of the show because they are a part of the show. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like every time I make a set list, and I'm sure you guys are like this too, it's almost like a meditation. It's like you're serving the menu. So you mm-hmm. want to know like, oh, this is what we should play when we should play it. Because mm-hmm. I think every musician, no matter if you're in a cover band or an original, it never fails. Somebody's going to come up and say, hey, do you know some random song, thinking mm-hmm. that every musician knows every song in the catalog, which is not the case because it's not rehearsed or it's not, you know what I mean? It's like we get those requests all the time. Yeah. And sometimes it's even for songs that we know and I've gone to festivals a couple of years in a row and just not played songs that a crowd's yelling for. I'm like, it's not on the set list because that's part of being in the moment. And sometimes I'll take songs off the set list and improvise and say, I want to throw an audible because I'm feeling we should do this song instead. So, but, I always find it super commendable that a good cover band will play that song with the audience requests. Mm-hmm. And it's like the best cover bands, when somebody comes in and says, can you play Tennessee Whiskey? They throw down and it's such a great rendition or version or arrangement or performance or all of the above that it transcends like what entertainment is. It's like you are doing exactly what, that moment is calling for. So it's commendable that you guys are able to do that. And you must know how many songs are in your songbook as a cover band?
A few hundred. At the very least.
That is crazy.
And so, and these are like, this is for this particular project. So over the years, you learn other stuff, the simple stuff, the 80s stuff, the 70s stuff. It's always there, but I don't really play it in the show. So I think collectively, everyone that's in the group, they hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands. I'm not sure.
I mean, that's crazy. That's amazing.
That just happens over the years. And like I said, but it is, like you said, it is a balancing act, saying, okay, what, so even though we're still doing an homage or a cover for the original music, you still have the desire to. And so one of the things that I wanted for the Thrills is a mission statement, which is we're going to play newer music. So we're going to do over half of the set is post 2000. And then the rest of them will sprinkle all this 80s stuff, all the 70s stuff, maybe some 50s stuff. You never know. The 50s stuff is a lot of fun because, they'll ask for something like La Bamba, and then we'll go into other songs. And next thing
Those are great songs.
Next thing you know, you're doing Wooly Bully, and people are twisting, and you're like, this is where I'm at. So those are where the audibles come in. But
those are still cool songs. Like, I mean, I would think like Macarena would be a bad song to like play. That would not be fun. You know what I mean? But like playing an Elvis tune or playing like a Richie Valens song, that to me, that, you know, we love all that music anyway. So it, that yeah. wouldn't be, unless you're playing it all the time. Is there a song that is always requested or that is always a go-to that you know that you're playing every show?
I think lately with the dance bands, it's got to be stuff like it's got to be the Maroon 5. It's got to be the Bruno Mars. That's just kind of like staples.
Right.
So I find that happens a lot, but you have to do it. And, you know, it's fun when you have a packed floor, the crowd gives you the energy.
Yeah, I agree. Let's play something. What do you want to play us first?
You pick. Let's see. I've got, as a matter of fact, I'm going to tell you something about this demo. So we went into studio and I brought in my board and I brought in an R16 and I just plugged everyone in. And I said, let's count it off. So I'm a big believer in recording stuff that's more raw. And maybe that goes back to the blues day where, I don't know, I get excited when I hear mistakes. I'm weird that way, right?
Same way. I actually put more mistakes on more records as I get older. That's yes. how it is.
Like just little things like that that make a record alive. Yep. And so I actually, that was the purpose of doing it. I said, I want to record us just playing like we would be playing any club or any event and just get out of our way. So there's no auto-tune in it. There's no super production. There's no glossy. I mixed it. I mastered it. I'm not great at it, but so, and that's what you hear. I think a couple of them, I think the X's and O's that actually ends a little early because we just did a verse and of course,
that's all right. And
so that went back. That went into the medley. So I usually like to do medleys, and I like to show that in the demo. But yeah, you can start from the top, or
yeah, let's do X's and O's. Let's play that since you were just talking about it, Renee. Let's play X's and O's, and don't forget to turn off original sound.
I just love that song. And that was the end. So we just recorded first chorus, verse, something like that.
Dude, it sounds better than the original, bro. And I'm not saying that lightly.
That's a testament to the group, really. And my role in the band is sometimes I see it as bringing everyone together. I think there's a lot of talent in the band, and I don't mind being the person that puts it all together and lets people shine. And so that's one of the things I've learned from being early on and playing all these old rock songs and just doing the solos for 10, 15 minutes and just riffing on pentatonic licks. And I was like, well, that doesn't help the song.
it only helps. It can sometimes. But
sometimes it does, but that doesn't really help the song. And I find that a lot of the popular stuff is more rhythm based.
Right.
And so that's what I have. But yeah, but that's all straight to the board. And I set the levels. You know, maybe there's some reverb there. But other than that, that's my approach. I want people to know, see, when you hire a band, you want to hear the band you hire. Yes. So there's a lot of bands, and it happens in the scene where you hear the demo and then you're like, oh my God.
Oh my God.
And then you hire the band and then you're like, well, they don't quite sound the same. You know?
It happens on every level. It's like unbelievable that, you know, I'm a firm believer in that. Like, I just did a new record and we did it all to analog tape, no computers. So like everything,
great.
You have to play it. It's like, you have to play it. You have to sing it. You have to, you know, like there's no punches. You're like, I mean, you can do punches, but there's no, you know, I always say tape doesn't have wings. Anytime like a horn player is like, hey man, can we fly that? Nope. Cause it doesn't have wings. You know, you have to do it. You have to keep playing it until it's right. Or we redo it, or we just keep playing. So every part's different, you know? So I'm a firm believer in that. Most people don't get that, but I love that you do, because you're doing it already with what you're doing. And cause you see the same thing that I do. It's like people are being fooled by production and, they're buying into a product or show or an experience that is not what the demos are showing, you know.
Yeah, it's marketing, and I get it. It's just that it's not for me,
right?
Because you know, the proof of a band is when you see them on stage. So right. I mean, and I learned this early on when I was recording some demos, and I was younger, and I would be like, let's do another take. 10 takes later. And when I heard it back, they all sounded the same.
Right.
So what I think I read an Eric Johnson interview where he says there was diminishing returns after a certain amount of time. So you do a couple of takes because you want 2 or 3 takes. And after that, you're kind of doing the same thing again. Yes. And you get in your head. So I just like the being raw and be more there, because that's what's going to happen when you see us on stage. This is what you're going to hear.
And it's always the same members, or do you have rotating subs?
Most of the time, I would say 90% of the time, it's the same members. We have Ginny on the vocals, and she's just fantastic. And then Phil Fitzwater is on bass. And then Dennis is our drummer. He was in and out because he had left. He's from out of the country. So he went back home for a while, and I was so lucky to find a couple of other guys that are just amazing drummers. And something I have a thing with drummers where they're just the heart of the band. I can strum all day.
We see music eye to eye. Everything you've said, I'm like, dude, I have the same philosophy. Yes. Everything about letting people shine, everything about the drums are a band is only as good as its drummer. That's how it's important.
So that to me, it's just foundational. So everything. Over time, I realized that the guitar and some of the key stuff, it sits on top of the bass and drums and what they're doing. And then those other instruments, the guitar and the keys, you know, they're just there to get out of the way of the singer, because the singer is the center. The singer is the song. Because other than that, you'd be playing instrumentals all day, you know? So I found a really good friend of mine. His name is Gino Dileva. I don't know if you've met him, but he's friends with friends of friends, because how you and I met was online, right?
Right.
I don't know how, but we were talking about something and we found that we agreed on things, right? And next thing I know, we're friends online, and everything that comes out of you is just, it's great. It's positive. It's
I try.
And I appreciate that.
Political post, man.
I don't do that. I mean, I'll respond to something I see, because, you know, I'm a bit of, I can be, I don't know, I'm an instigator, but I try not to do that, especially here. But
no, dude, you're the same way. All your posts are super positive, and I believe in that. It's like, that's all we can do, and especially if it's like music, or you know, like you know, the funny thing in that guitar, the best 100 guitarists that turned into best.
That was great. That was great,
man. You know, that got more input from more people than I don't know. I than almost any post I've done, and I loved it, because It was like, yes. And I got exposed to so many guitarists I'd never even heard of. And it was like, man, this guy's slamming. Does he belong in the top 200, top 100, top 10? You know, so it's like constantly reshuffling. But I just love that people were passionate about music. That's all I care about. It's like music is that unspoken language that is connects us all, you know? So, and I love that you're playing. Like, one thing I love about a great cover band, it's like they're the soundtrack of the moment. You know what I mean? So it's like if it's a party or a corporate event or whatever it is, it's like you are the theme music. And so you're dictating how that party is going to feel, how they're going to move. Is there a combination of songs that you're always like, this is our 1-2 punch, this is our mashup that we know is going to get people?
I'm a big believer in medleys. I'm a big believer that if people are going to stand up, you want them to stay on their feet. So I end up doing a lot of that. I saw a band, I think it was at a casino or a club years and years ago, and they played for like 20 minutes straight. And I was like, this is great, because it's like a DJ where they're mixing song to song. So in my head, I'm always trying to match up songs. I'm always trying to say, okay, and I'm really big on tempo. So like, I know my magical tempos. I know the 116, the Billie Jean, that's magic. You just find all those 116s. I know that the 128s, which is Jagger, I know that's a really good one. Now, with the 150s, 153, 154, you're talking The Cure there. You're talking stuff like that. So I'm always thinking, I'll listen to a song. It'll be on the radio or something, and I'll tap it out. I'm like, okay. This is a 130. I could put this into the Jagger medley. You know, but Jagger, with I Got a Feeling, they're all 128. So you extend the time that people are dancing.
So your medleys are all the same BPM?
I like to keep them that way, yes.
Do you ever challenge yourself by doing different BPMs?
Yes, I'd have to put a stop in there. Sometimes, you know, you add a stop and pop. And then you're depending on your drummer. The drummers that I work with, I mentioned Dennis is the main drummer, and then Gino. It's an amazing drummer. Also, I've had another drummer that I work with, John, and he's very active. I mean, he works with the Miami Sound Machine, LA Sound Machine. He works with them. He works, I think, with Naked Eyes. I forget the name of the band, but that guy.
I don't know your rhythm if you're playing with Miami Sound Machine, man.
Yeah. So they usually have a click, and I like that, because I just like to have the tempo even. I'm really big on the tempo and making sure that
so he's got an earphone that has a click always?
Mm-hmm. A click. Wow. Or if I have a track, because one of the things that we're doing with the band is I struggled with keys, to be honest. It's hard. So I went from 4-piece, I went to a 5-piece, and then I was looking for a second guitarist, and I found that it was really difficult to schedule, especially because everyone's busy. And then if I wanted a keyboard player, they are very busy. The good ones are very, very busy. Right. So I started incorporating tracks. So that was a process to where I give the drummer the click and the track, and then I have the Furnace House mix it. And it adds sounds. You'll probably hear it. You'll hear it in the Gwen Stefani song, the Make Me Like You song. You'll hear that there's just what I call ear candy.
Well, let's play that next right
sure.
now.
You hear ear candy, and that adds to sometimes... another perfect example I was talking about Jagger, it's the whistle.
Right.
You know, people just want to hear that whistle, right? I tried playing it without those parts, and it's tough. You want to sound fuller. And that's a big struggle for a lot of bands that are trying to maintain the lineup. And I try to maintain the lineup most of the time. So you'll see some cover bands that every time you see them, it's a whole different crew.
Yeah,
and I don't like that. I like the crew to stay consistent. So
right. All right, let's play this one next.
Make Me Like You?
Make Me Like You.
It's such a danceable song. This is a really good song.
I was fine for met you. I was broken but fine. I was lost and uncertain, but my heart was still mine. I was free for I met you. I was broken but free, all alone in a clear view, but now you are all I see. Hey, wait a minute, no, you can't do this to me. Hey, wait a minute, no, that's not fair. Hey, wait a minute, you're on me like jewelry. Hey, I really like you, but I'm
scared.
Great track. That bass player was just laying it down, man.
That's Phil, man. Phil is just, he's such a great guy. Nicest guy you'll meet. Nicest guy you'll meet.
Dude, I mean, you know what? The cool thing is you're playing cool tunes. Is there ever a song that you never get tired of playing?
This would be one.
I can see why.
As a matter of fact, I think we've opened a lot of sets with it because it just brings you into the mood, right?
Right.
I remember the first time I heard it, it must have been 4 years ago. Right? I don't know how old the song is. I was driving and I remember making a turn. I was out in Lake Forest where I used to live. I remember I was like, we're going to be playing the song. So this happens a lot to me where I listen to a lot of newer music or I get the release radar on Spotify or something. And I'll listen to things and I'll be like, we're going to end up playing the song. This song's going to be bigger than when it's, you know, when it's begun. So, and as it turned out, I didn't realize that it was a thing they did in The Voice. And she did a whole music video thing in The Voice.
Right.
But it's the beat. Like I said, I'm really like to listen to those magic tempos, you know. And so that's one of the songs that did that.
So how do you do it? Do you write out the charts and then rehearse the band? Or is everybody just kind of like learn it on their own and then come to rehearsal and they're ready to play it?
These guys are so good that I just say, this is a song. And I would say 99% of the time on the first take it goes. And then we have to do it a couple of times just so you get used to it. And this is why I love the band. I love these guys. They make it so easy to work with. And this is one of my, this is one of the expectations I have is like, if you're going to be in the band, it's like, I'm not going to ride you. I'm not going to, you know, require to rehearse daily or for hours at a time. Because I've been in bands like that before, you know. Where it'd be like 3 times a week, full speed, 4 hours. okay. in a small right. studio.
Right.
So I was like, the expectation was like, you know, people have busy lives. People have things going on at home. They may have family. They may have school. They may have work. If we can all come to this agreement where these are the songs that we're playing, we're going to the studio to run them through. I haven't had any issues with that. I've been very, very fortunate. And like I said, it all has to do with the crew and the talent. You know, I love them.
Well, that's everything. It's also like the hang. It's so important. It's funny because we used to rehearse 3 times a week, every week for years. And the crazy thing is, you know, like it actually helped to have a lot of arrangements, mm-hmm. a lot of songs that I'm still catching up with recordings. Like, oh my God, I forgot we did this song. We never finished writing it. Or, oh my God, we never did this arrangement like this. So, I think it lends itself to that, like allowing yourself to kind of like add to the catalog of songs or arrangements that you have. But you're right. It's also tiring. Like now I don't have that desire to rehearse 3 times a week. I'm like, guys, let's rehearse before the gig or maybe before a record. For the record, we actually did, I think, 2 times a week where we were just rehearsing at the beginning of the week and at the end of the week. And it was really just because of schedules. But there's something about just coming together to work on music and then just, okay, I'll see you at the gig. There's a moment where it's like a little unsure that when it is coming together at the gig, there's it's coming. It's like a real moment, you know? Yeah,
absolutely. There's so much value to rehearsal, but it is a balance. So I have to think, I think about the guys a lot. I think about the crew a lot. So for example, we haven't had a show since earlier this year. And the reason for that is it's not worth it for me to have that risk put upon the crew where I could put them in a bar or in a situation. It just isn't. And I'm sure you can probably relate to that. I'm always thinking about what's best for everyone. So, you know, that's just the way I look at it. I have to take care of them.
Photo shoot. Like my drummer was like, you know, I'm a little nervous and I'm like, dude, I get it. Let's do a remote photo shoot. So I said, everybody stand in front of a color background or a white background, whatever it is. And send me the pictures, and we were able to do it. And you wouldn't be able to tell that it's a remote photo shoot. But you know,
pick a color and remove the background.
Yeah, it's basically what we did, and it's kind of awesome. But you have to respect everybody's kind of. That's part of being in a band. That's what makes being in a band great. Is that you're working together, and it's about like making sure everybody's like taken care of, like a family. You know.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Well, let's play this last track. What do you want to play? You choose the last one because I know you sent me 2.
I sent you 4.
You sent me
2 and 2.
2 more, I meant.
What did I send you?
She's Kerosene.
You could. I really, really love She's Kerosene. That's not the full song. It's just like a verse, chorus, solo. The one that's Nathaniel Rateliff. I'm singing it, and I gotta tell you, we could play that. I don't like my singing voice. But
that's okay. No, you know what? If the other one's only a minute, maybe we can get to. How long's the other one?
Let's see. So one of them is 3.5 minutes, and the other one is 1:46.
All right, let's play them both, man. We're gonna do them both. Let's do the shorter one first.
Great.
She's Kerosene. Here it is.
Mm-hmm.
Fire.
man, because it's just like, so it's, you know, a lot of people think, oh, that's easy, because like sometimes the songs are like in ska music, they're just fun, they just sound fun. But like really musically, they're pretty intellectual, just like how it's taken from the reggae beat, but it's just, you know, that consistent. And I think there's like a really thin line between a good ska band and a great ska band, and it's like what makes it is that ska riff, that the guitarist riff, dude. So like, man, great job on that.
The Chuck, like, yeah, and that's an example of a song where in the original record there's an organ, and when we were putting this together, I didn't have the organ. I was like, well, I'll add it later, but here we are, and that's just straight off the board. We just did that, and that's why the ending is awesome. it's fun.
No, but that's what makes it cool, man. All right, we're gonna play this next one. What's the name of it again?
You Worry Me. This is a Nathaniel Rateliff song, and oh god, I love this guy. He just has a great band. He did that SOB song, and I was like, very soulful. He's in my range vocally, so I was able to at least try and sing like him. So, and this is a fuller production. Also, it has the tracks, it has the guitars, it has the bass. So, hope you enjoy it.
All right, here it comes.
Find a way to cross and you're gonna get there. I'm on fire today. Ain't no water here to calm or even put me out. I'll find a better way. Am I crazy or the wind is gonna blow me down? I'm gonna leave it all out there. I'm gonna leave it all out there. I'm gonna leave it all out there to dry. I'm gonna leave it all out there. You seem tired today. Were you up all night afraid of what the future might bring? I've had dreams of you in places I've not seen before. It's okay to wait, like love is new to bodies first to touch you. This ain't a getaway. You build walls around your heart to try to lock it in. I'm gonna leave it all out there. I'm gonna leave it all out there. I'm gonna leave it all out there to dry out. I'm gonna leave it all out there. The cities and the plains. You got time, you're on the mend, babe. And everybody wants the same. Everybody wants the same thing. I'm gonna leave it all out there to dry. I'm gonna leave it all out there. I'm gonna leave it all out there to dry up. I'm gonna leave it all out there. Oh, you worry me. You worry me. You worry me. You worry me. You worry me.
awesome. Super dope, dude. What a great song.
Great song. It's such a good song. It's a lot of the stuff that he does is just very soulful.
I've seen him play twice, man. He's
really
on a level, man.
He has a big band, right? Bands.
He's got a big band. I saw him at Coachella once, and then I only saw him. We got tickets super late to see him at the Greek, and I saw him for like 4 or 5 songs, and it was super fun just to see because there was nothing going on. I was like, oh my God, he's playing. So we just went randomly, and it was great. It was so awesome.
Pretty great.
He's just a badass. Where can people find the band if they want to book you guys for your next event? What's the website? Social?
It is www.thethrillsband.com.
Spell it out because people are dumb.
Is that right? The THE. Is this test?
No.
THETHRILLSBAND.com.
I always make people spell it out because people, well, they won't get it on the first listen, you know? So if you spell it out, it's like, boom, there it is. Angel, you are a badass. You are on the right track with all your philosophies. We see eye to eye. We got to jam sometime.
I think so. Yes.
Dude, definitely.
Get your mask on and then we'll do that. Okay.
Let's do it. I'm ready, man. Thanks for taking the time to do the interview, man. You were such
thank
a
you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate you bringing me on.
We'll have you on again, man. Keep rocking in the free world. That's what I'll leave you with. Yes. All right.
You got it, buddy.
Stay healthy. Stay safe. Okay, man.
See this. Bye.
Cheers, man.